A real frontline patriot brings you his one-of-a-kind perspective on freedom versus tyranny. This is the world premiere of the Political Prisoner Podcast, powered by Gateway Pundit. Now, live from solitary confinement, here's your host, January Sixer, Jake Lang.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Political Prisoner Podcast. It's your host, Jake Lang. Man, I got an exciting episode for you guys today. I think it's groundbreaking, and I tend to sensationalize a lot of my podcasts, but this one is truly groundbreaking. I have such a special guest with me today, Tyreek Johnson, Lieutenant of Capitol Police Officers, while also being the Routine Operations Commander on January 6th, the day of the Capitol protest and the certification. This is going to be groundbreaking, well, because I'm a January 6er and I'm sitting in jail, and we have a whistleblower from the Capitol Police Officers with us here today. I think that you guys are going to learn a lot. Everybody just really tune into this. Get your pencil out, your paper out, take some notes. We're really trying to unravel the day of January 6th, some of the nefarious actors, Capitol Police managers and chief of police and the people that were behind the scenes that kind of let the event go down the way it did that day. Tyreek's got some amazing insider information. He's got a call to action and some stuff that he's up to try to bring some more Capitol Police whistleblowers together. So without further ado, let me bring in my friend and just a brave, brave man, Tyreek Johnson. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you, Jake. And I love the beautiful, warm introduction you just gave me just now. Almost made me want to cry.
Well, you got to be brave to stand against these people, man. The D.C. swamp, as you know, when you're no longer useful to them, they'll chew you up and spit you out. And so you've come forward very bravely. You've been part of Twitter spaces in the January 6th community, some very large ones that we've recently put on. But this is your time now. We're going to go through a couple segments with the audience here on Gateway Pundit and Blessed News and everywhere that's listening. And we're really going to get into the nitty-gritty of some of the events, you know, and circumstances surrounding January 6th, some of the key players. And so we talked a little bit before we just got on this podcast here about your experience. I mean, you started working for the Capitol Police in March 1999, and I told you I was 4 years old when you started working for the Capitol Police. I mean, you have over 20 years' experience working there, right?
Yeah, I was there for 23 and a half years.
Huh. Incredible. And being the Routines Operations Commander on January 6th, walk me through the beginning of the day. Let's start from the beginning, and we'll get into some of the things that happened with Yogananda Pittman and J. Thomas Manger, the current chief of the Capitol Police, and some of the stuff they've been up to. But start me off at about noon on January 6, 2021. Trump's, you know, everyone's waiting for Trump to start speaking. It's a cold day. Where were you at? What was the Capitol like and before the first protesters show up? And give the people a little bit of background, what was going on that day.
Well, just to give you a background, I would probably have to start a little bit earlier. I got to work at about 7 o'clock, and when I pulled up, there were a lot of people out there. I wasn't expecting to see so many people out there that early, but they were there. Parked the car, went into the building, and pretty much just did my regular routine work, checked my emails, stuff like that. Then, I can't remember exactly what time it was, but it was definitely the a.m., maybe 10, maybe 11, maybe a little bit after. And I watched a little bit of Donald Trump speaking while he was at the Ellipse. Didn't watch the whole speech because I was still working. So around 12, maybe 12:50-ish, I heard on the radio, on my police radio, that the fence line had been broken on the West Front. So I went outside to see, and I see a sea of people outside. And, you know, basically the rest, for the most part, is pretty much history, but I'll go over a little bit of it so people can know some of what I did on that day. So I was basically, you know, watching.
Give me 1 second. First, tell me, when you looked out your window and you saw the sea of people, did you see an angry, murderous mob or a bunch of Americans waving flags and people that were you know, for the most part, I mean, everybody unarmed and, you know, just protesting and, you know, maybe getting a little closer to the building than the Capitol Police would like. But were you like, did your signal flares go off in your mind like, oh man, this is, you know, this is a bunch of people who are looking to kill and destroy and burn down the Capitol?
Well, when I first got out there, I didn't see much violence when I first walked outside. Now, we all know that there were some things that happened. There was violence there that day, but everybody there, and we know that the larger percentage of people weren't there for violence. They wanted to support their presidents. But yes, violence did occur on that day. When I walked out there, I didn't see anybody fighting. I saw basically people throwing stuff at the police when I went outside. I actually went outside, and I was on the, like, one of the higher landings, like the middle landing, and I was looking down, and I could see the people on the west lawn. And we had a fence there, and the people who, obviously, who came first would have seen it, but the people behind them wouldn't have saw the fence there because it was gone. So they didn't even know,
yeah, like myself,
like those people, that they were in a restricted area. They could not have known.
Yeah, that's the vast majority of people. There's, you know, when you're like myself, I arrived at like 2:30 in the afternoon. I didn't see any fences down, and I couldn't see, you know, any restricted area postings and stuff. So you're 100% right there. I didn't know myself.
Yeah, if you got there at 2:30, if you got there at 2:30, then there's no way you could have known.
2:30.
If you got there after 1 o'clock, then you wouldn't have known. Because the fence was already gone.
So lead me through. So you go outside, you see the crowd of people, maybe some water bottles and a little bit of back and forth going on with the Capitol Police. They're doing stuff. When did you hear on the radio, or tell me this, when did the munitions start getting shot off by the Capitol Police? Who made that call? Tell me a little bit about that, because being a January 6er and being part of this community for so long, that's the contention point that a lot of people start to say, well, this is when the protest really erupted into real violence, when the Capitol Police, certain people in the Capitol Police gave the command that it was okay to open fire, you know, flash grenades, knee knockers, pepper ball bullets. Tell me a little bit about that process. Enlighten the audience here, because we want to know. We want to know what it was like on the radios and listening in. And what do you know about that process?
Well, like, where I was at, I was focused. Everybody was, like, doing their own thing on that day. You know, some people, like, I wasn't on the CDU team. I was actually supposed to be just inside the Capitol. I came out to assist when I heard what was going on. And Jake, I don't know if you've seen a lot of my interviews or spaces I've done. I know you saw some stuff, but one of the things that I tried to tell the audience, the J6 community, is that the police and the people who came to the Capitol to demonstrate, everybody, we were all set up that day. And I know that, and what I've been trying to focus on, and I know a lot of people are focusing on the violence. The officers are focusing on the violence that some of the demonstrators did, and the demonstrators are focusing on the violence that the officers did to them. And I've been trying to explain to people, I have forgiven everybody for what happened to me, you know, because I took some mace or some kind of gas, and my job, you know, because that day, had that day not occurred, my career would have still be ongoing. So I lost my career behind what occurred on that day. But I have forgiven. Because now I know that the people there were set up. The people, everybody that came to the Capitol that day, you guys were all set up. 100%. The police officers were set up. Because we had no idea what was going to happen. Now, there was a report that was made from the intel section. It's called 21 TD-159, and it basically said what was going to happen. Yogananda Pittman had that document, and she would not pass it to the entities that needed it so we could prepare. We were supposed to protect you guys from yourself. We should have had a greater shore force there, more officers, the National Guard, all that should have been there. And because now if all that was there and you came to the Capitol at that point, you would have said, you know what? I'm not even going to go through this. I'm just going to go back home. I'm going to stand outside the fence line. you guys would have been protected from yourselves, because that's what police officers, what laws are created to protect people from themselves. That's what police officers are supposed to do. We are supposed to protect our citizens from themselves. That didn't happen because I believe that somebody wanted this to happen. That's why the intel was withheld.
Tell me more about when did Yogananda Pittman, who was at the time, she was the chief of the intel division of the Capitol Police on January 6th. What do you know about her? Because you speak a lot about her. Why would she withhold this information? Who do you think was behind her orders to withhold this information? And give us a little bit of insight about, really whistleblow, really tell the American people the stuff that they need to know on the deep inside of this thing. Why is Yogananda Pittman holding back this information?
No problem, Jake. I will tell you exactly why she would do it. Now, if January 6th were to happen, officers would get hurt. That means you would have to fire the current chief. You're going to blame the chief for it. And who would be better to become the chief if you're the assistant chief is going to be the assistant chief, which was her. She was the assistant chief, so she would become chief. So she wanted to do it for her to make chief so Stephen A.'s son would be out of the way, and she would also gain favor from Nancy Pelosi. That's why she did it, I believe.
Okay. That's a very legitimate motive. Pretty much everything that's happening to us in the courtrooms and everything that's happening in Washington, D.C. is one large dog pile. Everybody's scrambling and stepping on each other's necks to get to the top here. So that's a very believable reason in Washington, D.C. Pretty much just cutthroat behavior to try to get to the top. That's a good reason.
And Jake, let me explain to you why you guys...
connection.
Yeah, and let me explain
Pelosi and Yogananda Pittman as well.
And let me explain to you why you guys are getting crushed in court. So now, I think they said the conviction rate is like over 90%. It's high.
It's 99.4% right now.
That's pretty high. Now, let me explain to you this. Okay, now, there's two segments to all of this. You have the setup, which was led by Yogananda Pittman, and now you have the cover-up, which is led by J. Thomas Manger. So now, J. Thomas Manger is going to do everything he can.
You have 1 minute remaining.
He's going to do everything he can to protect Pittman, because if he does not do that, it's going to change the narrative. He needs the narrative to stay the same. He needs the narrative to be that a bunch of white, uneducated Trump supporters, angry about a stolen election, came to attack the Capitol for the purpose and with the purpose of insurrection. He needs that narrative to be that, and he cannot let that narrative change with the truth. So he's going to keep it buried.
100%. So when we come back, we're going to get a little bit more into some of the, just vicious actions of J. Thomas Manger, the current Capitol Police Chief, and Yogananda Pittman to the Capitol Police officers, the whistleblowers such as yourself. And we'll be right back with my brother Tyreek Johnson here. Lieutenant of the Capitol Police, this is Jake Lang. You're listening to the Political Prisoner Podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the Political Prisoner Podcast. It's your host, Jake Lang. Man, we've got a barn burner episode right now. Lieutenant of the Capitol Police, Tyreek Johnson, was the Routines Operation Commander on January 6th. He was in charge of, as the name says, the routine operations inside the Capitol. He also was the man that evacuated the chambers of Congress and the Senate on January 6th. He has some insider information. I believe this is going to be the headline to this entire interview about what he believes to be the case if he was able to evacuate both chambers at the same time without interference from Yogananda Pittman, that Ashley Babbitt would still be alive today, that she wouldn't have not been shot. So that is a major, major breaking news headline. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Also, if you guys didn't know, Tyreek Johnson was the man wearing the MAGA hat, the red MAGA hat, walking through the crowd that day. Everybody knows he's very famous for that. So I just want you guys to also keep that in mind. He is a great man, a whistleblower from the Capitol Police. He's been severely disciplined and even lost his 23-year career at the Capitol Police because of some of the cover-up behind January 6th. Yogananda Pittman and J. Thomas Manger and another Intel division operations head, Julie Farnham. They've all come down and crushed all of the dissenters, all of the Capitol Police officers that have a difference of opinion of what happened that day and want to tell the truth. So we're here right now with Tyreek, my brother. God bless you.
And thank you for having me on, Jake.
Thank you so much. So, yeah, let's get back into a little bit of the timeline here. When we kind of trailed off talking about that we were set up on January 6th. Everybody knows it, that there was a lot to be gained by a fake insurrection at the Capitol that day. But tell me a little bit about this evacuation process of the Congressional and Senate chambers, how this went down, and the fact that you also have the radio, actual radio evidence, the recordings of you and Yogananda Pittman going back and forth to back this up, which we will be playing for the audience later. Tell us about this. Give us a step-by-step.
Now, it was about maybe 2 o'clock when I heard that the Capitol was breached. It was around 2 o'clock. So I went into the Capitol. I was on the West Front. So I departed the West Front to go inside to assist. Now, all of this is on the radio transmission, so you can hear all this. My call sign was 405J John. So anytime you hear on the radio, any part of the day, 405J John, that's me. And you will hear Yogananda Pittman. Her call sign was Unit 2. So when you hear Unit 2, that's Pittman. When you hear 405J John, that's me. So I went into the Capitol, and I realized that people were coming in. I saw people inside of the Capitol. Nobody attacked me when I was in. People walked past me, but they were coming in and coming in. And you could hear transmissions on the radio where they were coming in on the east side. And at a certain point, I realized that it was just time to just evacuate the building, to de-escalate the situation. So I called for the evacuation of the Senate at around 2:28 is when it started. I then called for the evacuation of the House at 2:36, 8 minutes after I did the House, the Senate. So Ashley Babbitt went to the House side is where she went, and she went to the House lobby. That's where she was shot. If we would have evacuated both chambers at 2:28, Ashley Babbitt would not have been shot.
That's miraculous to me. Now, why weren't you able to evacuate both chambers at 2:28? Tell me what happened.
Now, I was on the Senate side, and now one thing that most people don't know is that I wasn't supposed to evacuate at all. That's against our policy. But I knew that we could not mitigate the people from coming, and we couldn't stop that. So I figured that let's just get the members of Congress out of the building. So I requested if I could evacuate the Senate, and then Pittman would not answer. So then I said, I'll take the discipline. I'm going to do it anyway. So I didn't want to do the House side.
Very brave of you.
Yeah, and thank you very much. And I didn't want to evacuate. Now, I'm on the Senate side at this point, so I can't see what's on the House side. So I outlined a line of travel to get everybody out of the building safely, and we were able to do that. Now, on the House side, I couldn't see over there, so I didn't want to evacuate, but then I realized Pittman wasn't going to help. So I started that at 2:36, and I had to do it over the radio, and you can hear me and how I did it. I just had officers open the doors, pick the doors with the least amount of demonstrators, and take them basically out of the building through the subways. So I told them how to do it, even though I couldn't see. Now, Pittman can see everything because she has all the cameras. She's sitting in the command center, so she could have helped me, but she would not even help. So I just knew I had to do it on my own.
You're making this call to Pittman, like, let's evacuate both chambers. Let's evacuate all the congressmen and the senators, everybody out right now. And she's radio silent. She's just, AWOL on you. And you can hear this in the radio transmission. That is dereliction of duty. That is, she's culpable for the death of Ashley Babbitt.
She's culpable for the death of Ashley Babbitt. Everybody that came into the Capitol, anybody that got arrested, any officer that got hurt, any officer that committed suicide, this whole thing is because of Yogananda Pittman. Everybody is in a situation. Had Yogananda Pittman not been chief, and you had an ethical person in that seat, as the intel commander, the intel chief, this would not have happened. This would not have happened, and you wouldn't be in jail right now if Yogananda Pittman wasn't the assistant chief.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's so hard to hear from, you know, from coming from the inside, because we've been so shut off from society for so long, and it's so hard. You know, you get so many different stories of January 6th, but to hear about the fact that she, you know, ignored the intel reports way off in the beginning about the truth of what was going to happen on January 6th, did not fortify the Capitol, put just a couple stray members with a bike rack outside most of the Capitol boundaries, you know what I mean, and let this entire thing transpire. Then as it was transpiring, even let it further degrade into chaos by not allowing you, the routines operations manager, to be able to clear the sitting U.S. Congress members out of the building. It's really upsetting to me, because it's just like, you know, our lives have been destroyed. 1,300 people have been arrested with their families, and everybody's been destroyed. Their lives, Tyreek, it's hard.
And, and there's going to be more. And J. Thomas Major is going to make sure that it's more. And basically what Pittman did on that day, she basically said she knew that people were angry because they believed that the election was stolen, whether it was stolen or not. If you know that people are angry, and you know that they're coming to the Hill, and you know that they plan on doing certain things, some people have planned on doing certain things, you have to fortify the building. She wouldn't do it. She basically made sure that we were understaffed, basically throwing gasoline on the fire. She did this to us on purpose, in my opinion. And if it wasn't on purpose,
wow,
the negligence is so sizable, it has to be considered purposely done. She did this.
It's basically entrapment through incompetence, really, is what it is. Either that or it was planned.
If it wasn't
incompetence, then it was malfeasance.
But she has been heralded as the person, basically, who saved democracy. And she took credit for the evacuation and everything. But if you listen to the radio transmissions, you'll know that that's just not true. And the reason why, let me tell you why I made the call to evacuate, was because I didn't do it just for the members of Congress or the staff or the police officers. I did it for the police officers not to be put in that horrible situation, to make a situation where it could have been many more Ashley Babbitts in there. And I did it because I knew the demonstrators needed to be calmed down. And the biggest aggravating factor in that building was the members of Congress, and it was best just to get them out. If you would have bumped into a member of Congress on the way in, they would have added a terrorism charge to your sentence. So I helped a lot of people.
Yeah.
Even if they don't know it, I know it, and that's good enough for me.
Well, we do thank you for, you know, being decisive and quick with your action. What do you think would have happened if Pittman would have been responsive and let you clear out both Senate and the congressional chambers at the same time? You're saying that Ashley Babbitt wouldn't have been shot at all. She wouldn't have had the circumstances behind her shooting, right?
By the time she got to the House chamber, the person who shot her, he would have been gone. He would have left with the last member of Congress. They needed more minutes. So if they would have evacuated earlier, he would not have even been there. When she got to the House lobby, it would have been empty. And she would be at home with her
that
family.
I mean, that's revelatory. Tyreek,
yeah,
that's revelatory. And our prayers go up to Ashley and her family and Roseanne and the other, Kevin and Benjamin Phillips, that lost their lives at the Capitol that day. You know, we really are, you know, the community is still mourning and still hurting from that. But we have, you know, now people, public officials that we need to hold to account, and we need to bring these people forward. We need real investigations. And so what kind of work have you seen from the investigation? What was your opinion on the January 6th Select Committee? Why weren't they answering these questions? Why wasn't Yogananda Pittman brought to the front of the room? And why weren't, you know, these questions asked? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I can tell you this, that they never called me to testify.
I wonder why. That's crazy.
I've never been called to testify.
It's remarkable to me.
Yeah, I've never been called. I was in charge of the Capitol. Routine Operations Commander. On the day of the counting of the electoral votes, I ordered the evacuation of both chambers, the Senate first and then the House, and I did not get an interview.
You should have been one of the first people they called, but that was obviously a fake January 6th Select Committee. They had an agenda, and you should have been one of the first people there. We should have had all of these people been brought in and had to answer why. Why did Yogananda Pittman delay the evacuation of the building? Why didn't she respond to the intel reports? Why have been the whistleblowers like yourself been silenced and disciplined and lost your careers and been forced out of the Capitol Police? Tell us a little bit more about that. What these actions of the J. Thomas Manger, Julie Farnham, who works underneath Yogananda Pittman, Yogananda Pittman himself, tell us about this toxic and hostile environment where they basically crushed and thrown away all of these. There's a group of U.S. Capitol Police officers that we'll talk about later that are trying to come forward and whistleblow. How were you guys treated after January 6th?
Obviously, horribly. Now, I don't know if you know this, but after, like, I knew it was Yogananda Pittman's fault immediately after January 6th. So, but I had been on, like I said, I was a lieutenant at the time, had over 20 years.
You have 1 minute remaining.
I guess I can save this part once we come back.
Yeah. We'll save that for when you come back. I got, guys, everybody that's listening, the audience right now, I really want you to guys share this article, share this podcast far and wide. This is some very serious stuff. I mean, we're talking about, history here. We're talking about this reframing of this event of January 6th as being an insurrection when clearly it was a larger operation by the government to entrap people and to have some type of narrative to use against Donald Trump. And we have whistleblower Tyreek Johnson, brave man, Capitol Police Lieutenant, stepping forward right now telling us the nitty-gritty details. Stay glued to where you're at. This is the Political Prisoner Podcast. I'm Jake Lang. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Political Prisoner Podcast. It's your host, Jake Lang. Where are you guys listening today? Are you listening on the Bless News app? The show is live 8 p.m. every weekend, Eastern Time. So check out blessnewsapp.com. You guys can watch live on there. All the Gateway Pundit listeners out there, thank you guys so much. God bless you. You guys are the best. Keep on supporting the Jan Sixers. Everybody that's listening on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, that's available. Just type in Jake Lang into the Spotify and Apple Podcast app. You will find this podcast. We're so grateful you guys share this article. This is some big, big headline stuff we're talking about here. We've got Capitol Police Officer, Lieutenant, in fact, Tyreek Johnson, the Routines Operations Manager at the Capitol on January 6th. He's a 23-year veteran of the Capitol Police Force. He's also come forward very bravely, very boldly, as a whistleblower, stating that January 6th was in fact a setup, that there were chiefs, the intel chief of police there. Yogananda Pittman had prior knowledge to January 6th that she did not act on. And then even inside the Capitol that day, she did not act to help clear out the Senate and the congressional chambers. We're going to quick circle back to that for the audience. We just spoke about this right before we hop back into the commercial break. Just give the exact breakdown. So you made the call to evacuate the Senate chambers, and you wanted to evacuate both Senate and congressional chambers at 2:27 p.m. Yogananda Pittman was unresponsive, correct?
100% correct.
So you wanted to simultaneously evacuate them, but you weren't able to actually evacuate the House chambers until about 7 or 8 minutes later at 2:36 p.m., and it's outside the House chambers where Ashley Babbitt had her fatal run-in, the murder by Lieutenant Byrd. So basically, if she would have answered the call at 2:27 p.m. in the afternoon to evacuate both the Senate and the House chambers, that entire situation wouldn't have transpired. You had an extra about 8 minutes before Ashley Babbitt even was in that scenario to have all of the congressional people out of there. Michael Byrd wouldn't have been present. I mean, these are the raw facts, right? This is what the radio transmission will back up.
Yes, the radio transmissions will back everything up I'm saying, and it's a shame that mainstream media is not reporting this. And this is factual, recorded radio transmissions from the Capitol Police. Indisputable. But the mainstream media will not report it.
Yeah, there's a big, you know, that's part of the agenda as well, too, is to twist and contort the events of January 6th and try to silence people such as yourself and other Capitol Police whistleblowers, which we're about to get into. This is also going to be big news for all of the listeners out there. But there is a larger agenda at play that anybody who has anything that goes against this official quote-unquote narrative, this contrived narrative that they've created, they have, you know, abused you guys. You've lost your career. You've been pretty much blacklisted from a lot of mainstream news media. They don't want to hear from you. They didn't even want to hear from you at the January 6th Select Committee. But we're going to try to change all that. We're going to try to blast this out to everybody and get a real fact-finding committee. So talk to me about the aftermath of January 6th. What kind of hostile, nasty things did Yogananda Pittman, who ascended to the Capitol Police Chief position after Steve Sund was fired, and then the person who took her helm after her in, what, July of 2021, J. Thomas Manger, right? He ascended after her. Tell us about what's been going on there with you guys being basically silenced and mistreated and fired and even legal action against you and the other whistleblowers who dare speak out against the unprepared and purposely unprepared nature of the Capitol Police on January 6th.
So as it relates to me now, there's so many different segments of this. As it relates to me, I was criminally investigated probably from January till about May time frame. That was for wearing a MAGA hat and trying to rescue the officers using Oath Keepers, who I never heard of before January 6th. I never knew what an Oath Keeper was until after January 6th. But so then I had to get an attorney for the administrative. I got my attorney predominantly for the administrative portion because I knew Capitol Police was going to come after me. Now, they came after me because not because of wearing a MAGA hat. That wasn't why I was suspended, I believe. Because now, what you don't know.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But now, like I said before we went to break, that I knew this was Yogananda Pittman's fault. So I had been, as long as I've been on the department, I've been there over two decades. So I know you never call the IG. If something happens, you don't call the IG because the IG is going to go back and tell the chief, which was Pittman. So I went and called Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont because he was my friend, and I protected him for years when I was a special agent before I got promoted to sergeant and then lieutenant. So I called, told him that Yogananda Pittman did this, and she was going to let everybody die that day. And he said he was going to give me he's going to have somebody give me a call within an hour. Well, he says that day within an hour, I got a call from the Capitol Police to tell, and they told me I was suspended. So I don't know if he went back and told the Capitol Police, but the Capitol Police called me an hour after I got off the phone with Senator Leahy.
Wow, that's remarkable. So talk to me about the internal investigator, the IG. Tell me about this process here that, you know, you had to debrief with them and tell them about, you know, your experience at the Capitol, your beliefs that people were, you know, not acting, Yogananda Pittman and other people at the Capitol were not acting in the best interest of keeping the Capitol secured and the people safe and the senators and congressmen safe. Tell me about that debriefing process and what's happened since then and what have they been doing to you since then.
Yeah, now, I never got a debrief anything. They never asked me any questions. The only thing they wanted to know is when I got called in for my investigation in June was they wanted to talk about the MAGA hat only. They didn't, and the Capitol Police, even till today, will not acknowledge, even though the radio transmissions say prove it, that it was me that evacuated those chambers. They won't order the evacuation of the chambers and led the evacuations. They will never admit that unless they were asked under oath. But, and nobody has asked them those questions under oath yet. But hopefully that will come at some point. But as it relates to the IG, the intel analysts who, and I'm pretty sure none of them had the time on that I did, they went to the IG thinking the IG was going to do something about what they knew had happened. You know, now, Yogananda Pittman had brought Julie Farnham in probably around November of 2020. Julie Farnham was basically like the Trojan horse of the intel section. She basically came in and she destroyed the intel. So basically they wouldn't have the intel, but they got it anyway and gave it to Pittman. So now if Julie Farnham coming in, destroying the intel section, and them not being able to compile what was going to occur on January 6th, but they did anyway, and they gave the report to Pittman, and they went and told what Julie Farnham tried to do and what Pittman did. So once they did that, they all were terminated.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. So like, when I say,
and
you know, like,
when you try telling the IG about this, and other people try to tell the IG about this, you guys think that they're going to do something, but this goes way over their head. They've got orders direct from, you know, the reptilian kings themselves of Washington, D.C., you know, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi and all of the lead Democrats basically lock this up tight. We cannot let any of this stuff get out. And anybody that starts to even speak about these things, suspend them, keep them away from the media, and try to really trash their reputation. Is that pretty much how it went down?
Yeah, that's exactly what they did. And if you, because it's a hell of a coincidence that only the people that got fired were the ones that went to the IG.
You have
no other,
1 minute remaining.
Yeah. So if you believe in coincidences, then you'll believe that they just happen to all be poor performers, even though most of them, if not all of them, had never been disciplined before. They all turned to horrible employees who needed to be terminated after J6.
No, that's just not true. That's just not true. They're trying to cover up January 6th, just as they orchestrated it. The crime and the cover-up are equally as bad.
The cover-up is probably worse because they're doing it probably
exactly
for money.
Tyreek, we're going to bring you back for one more little segment here. We're going to talk about moving forward, trying to get some of these Capitol Police whistleblowers together. We're doing some fundraising for Tyreek and for this operation. We're trying to get them all to a conference room and work this out so that we can get the truth of January 6th out there. So we're going to be back. We'll talk to Tyreek Johnson a little more, 23-year veteran of the Capitol Police Force, lieutenant and routine operations manager. Guys, welcome back to the Political Prisoner Podcast. It's your host, Jake Lang. We are absolutely tearing up the events of January 6th with Capitol Police Lieutenant Tyreek Johnson, 23-year veteran of the Capitol Police Force, routine operations commander on the Capitol grounds that day on January 6th, the fateful day. And he has since been suspended, and he is no longer working for the Capitol Police. They basically tossed him to the side. He wanted to tell the truth that January 6th was a setup. They silenced him, and they threw him away. They're not even acknowledging the fact that he was the one who tried to evacuate the Senate chambers and House chambers over the radio and then was not given permission. Nobody responded, so he went and did the brave and bold thing and took action himself and did that. Which we've heard, and so we want to thank him for taking action to protect people that day. I also tried taking some action to protect people that day. Some of the unarmed protesters are being injured, so sometimes as a man, you got to take action. You can't wait for somebody to tell you what to do, so we thank you for that, Tyreek.
Yeah, and no problem. And remember, too, it wasn't just for the members of Congress. It was for the police officers, too, because I didn't want them in a situation where it would have been more Ashley Babbitt there, and I didn't want the demonstrators in that situation either. They needed to be calmed down, and like I said, the biggest aggravating factor in the building was the member of Congress, so I needed to get them out, and that would calm them down too. They wouldn't bump into them. If a member of Congress would have broken a toenail because they bumped into a demonstrator, their lives would have been probably over too.
Yeah, 100%. You know, the word that you use that you know, gives me a lot of ease, de-escalation, because that's all, you know, we wanted that day, with the de-escalate, have our voices heard as protesters, as, you know, people that were redressing their grievance with the government, and it seemed to be a lot of actions were taken by people way higher up than we could imagine to escalate the situation, and thank you for your actions to try to de-escalate the situation. There was another question that we just spoke about, again, right before we came into the podcast recording. that I think the American people, the audience, is going to want to hear. So Lieutenant Byrd, when he was on interview with Lester Holt, he spoke about hearing a shots fired call over the radio to, inside the Capitol before he shot and killed and murdered Ashley Babbitt. That was actually you that made that call. Am I correct there?
I went over the radio and I asked if I thought I heard shots fired. So I went over the radio and I said, were there shots fired? I think I said second floor. I was standing on the second floor on the center side.
Okay. And that was some type of flash grenades or something you later realized it wasn't actual gunshots. It was some type of concussion or flash grenade or something like that, right?
I think that's what it was because I know I was on that floor, on the first floor, and I know I started burning at some point. So, yeah.
Well, then another lieutenant, another Capitol Police officer came on the radio before Ashley Babbitt was shot and confirmed that no, actually, in fact, there was no shots fired. That's correct, right?
That is correct.
So, I mean, Byrd conveniently heard that there were shots fired on one Capitol Police radio transmission, but he did not hear or mention that there was a call that saying no, in fact, there was no shots fired. So that is definitely a suspicious scenario there. We really wish and pray that he would have been able to take smarter action, knowing that there was not, in fact, people not shooting each other up inside the Capitol, that we were unarmed and Ashley was unarmed. That's very unfortunate. And so we will get down to the truth of that eventually one day when Byrd is deposed in front of the public, with a penalty of perjury. Hopefully he answers truthfully.
I would like to say,
radio trend.
Yeah, I would like to say one thing about Byrd. Now, he was also on the ground, and I know that he had no idea what was going to occur on January 6th. We had the same office. Him and I would have talked. He had no idea. He was kept in the dark, just like we all were, and I'm not going to try to convince anybody that he shouldn't have shot her or whatever, because people have their own opinion, and I know I'm not going to change it. But I will say this. He was put in an awful situation by Yogananda Pittman. He should have never been put in that situation. She put us all in this situation. She did this to all of us. And you know,
I agree,
she got,
100%.
And you know what she got? She got a job at California Berkeley making over $250,000 a year and while also receiving her Capitol Police pension. She's rich many times over now. So congratulations to her, and God bless her.
Well, as we know what the Bible says, my brother, that riches received through ill-gotten gain will not last. They will fade away like blades of grass. So there's a Lord in heaven that's watching, and he'll bring just recompense to that, and he will vindicate all of us, yourself and all of the January 6ers and everybody that was entrapped by the United States government and the nefarious actors working to spin a tale, a narrative of an insurrection that day. So before we get into the final segment, basically, which is we're going to be covering and talking about this new operation that you're trying to lead, it's just simply getting together all the Capitol Police whistleblowers in a conference room for a few days in a row and really just hashing out everything so you guys can all get on one accord and figure out how to band together and unite to get the truth out there, which we're going to be supporting on Gifts and Go. The J6 Legal Fund is going to be pushing a lot of those funds. Also, if you guys want to donate to Tyree Johnson's Gifts and Go, there will be a link for both of those in the bottom here to help support him. He's lost his job. He's gone through a lot of stress and taken a lot of personal time to tell the truth to January 6th. So we definitely want to support him and his Gifts and Go. So before that, I have just a couple just broad questions about January 6th. Ones that I wanted to ask for a long time to a man of your stature, a lieutenant at the Capitol Police, that may catch you as, maybe a little left field, but for me and for a lot of our listeners, they're going to matter. Do you think that January 6th is something that the Founding Fathers would have been a part of, that it may have represented some type of stand for liberty, even though we were unarmed, that the protesters at the Capitol that day were like righteous patriots?
I think that what happened to all of us, and because I know that some people in the J6 community told me, because I don't know if you know this, but I consider myself a J6er. Then I had a couple of J6ers and people in the community say, no, you're not a J6er. You're not one of us. So I said, okay. But I said this because this was an absolute setup. And this was not an insurrection. This was basically a coup staged and led by an overly ambitious, misguided, unethical commander. That was Yogananda Pittman. That's what this was. And we were all just victims of this. People were angry that they believed the election was stolen. Whether it was stolen or not, you knew they were angry when they were walking down to the Capitol. You knew they were coming to the Capitol. And you gaslit their anger and you created an insurrection. That was just plain, flat-out evil. And she's going to just be able to walk away from it in this life. But at the end of the day, I believe that if she's not held accountable for it in this life, she will be held accountable for it in the next. And what J. Thomas Manger is doing, he's trying to make it to ensure the narrative does not change for his wife, because his wife is heavily connected to the Democratic Party. She ran for county council as a Democrat in Maryland. She didn't win, but now that her husband, basically, who's going to be the silver bullet for Donald Trump, by ensuring that his narrative doesn't change, would probably help her in her next run.
Wow. So you're a Gen 6er. You stand with the January 6th political business. Do you openly call out that we should be freed? Is that something that you believe in, that there should be justice for Gen 6ers, that we should not be rotting away in prison? Do you stand with
this brother? 100%. Now, I do believe that there are some innocent people in jail right now that are sitting in jail, innocent. I believe that some people, if they were supposed to be charged, their charges are probably more than they should be. But J. Thomas Manger is going to make sure that that doesn't change. That's why he's doing what he's doing. Now, I don't think he really cares necessarily about the J6ers. You know, he looks at us as cannon fodder, basically. His goal is to make sure that he gets Trump, and he needs his narrative to say exactly what it is. That gets Trump, because if he's able to run in 2024, we all know the ardent Trump supporters are going to vote for him no matter what. You all know that the ardent Biden Trump, the ardent Biden supporters are going to vote for Biden. But if you're in the middle and you don't know which way to go, you going to say, well, Donald Trump did cause an insurrection, I'm going to go ahead and vote for Biden. So Biden's going to get those votes. But if the narrative changes, and it's actually what really occurred, that Pittman created this, people are going to say, hold up, that was just wrong, and they may vote for Trump. And J. Thomas Manger cannot allow that to happen.
Yeah, it sounds like J. Thomas Manger and Yogananda Pittman and other people such as...
You have 1 minute remaining.
We're all used as Democrat Party apparatchiks, as pawns, to try to further the goal of maintaining...
You were pawns.
It's unfortunate.
And now you're cannon fodder now.
Well, guys, everybody that's listening, I really want you guys to go click those links below here. Support the Gives and Goes. We are getting together all the Capitol Police whistleblowers. We're getting them all in a conference room. We're going to get the real story, get everyone banded together. I want you to support both the J6 Legal Fund and Tyreek's Gives and Goes so we can make this happen, guys. I thank you so much, Tyreek, for joining me. God bless you, and continue your boldness in speaking the truth. And we'll be talking again very soon, brother.
Thank you, Jake. I appreciate it.
God bless. January 6th is a setup. You heard it from the man himself. This is Jake Lang. Listen to the Political Prisoner Podcast. God bless America.